Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And coming at us live from what appears to be a Japanese changing room is Mel and Thomas Benedict from mel-thomas.com. He's a dude who knows a hell of a lot about near-death experiences. Mel, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinnie. Good to be back on the air with you.
Yeah, I think... I vaguely recall last time we had an hour with you, and then we decided that 2 hours would be probably a bit more appropriate.
Sure.
I could be misremembering. Speaking of misremembering, I was just wondering about this as well. Is a near-death experience, how often do people really have these? I mean, what's the likelihood that you will die and then come back to life in terms of how many people actually die?
Well, you know, the odds of that have increased dramatically with modern medical technology. People have been having and reporting very similar experiences all the way back in time, as far as we can remember. But in those days, you died, you know, mostly. Nowadays, they're pulling so many people back from death that we really have to, the doctors are redefining what the actual state of death is now, and when does that actually occur?
So many
tens of thousands a year now.
It seems to be going the other way. They're also starting to define what is life. How long has the fetus gestated before it's a living being? And there was a case in New Zealand, and you might appreciate this, where a father and his pregnant wife were driving along, and they got into a car accident, and it was the father's fault. And then they charged him with murder because the baby died, right? Well, they were thinking of charging him for murder. So it's like, mate, how callous can you really be? It's like somebody just lost a child, and then you're going to charge him for the murder in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really kind of harsh to me.
And that's a tough one because you know, if you shot a pregnant woman and killed her baby, you would be charged for double murder. And this is just an odd one of those cases that happens that's going to redefine the law at some point. So what do you do?
Yeah, well, so you're an expert in near death experiences, but what we're talking about is nearly alive experiences.
Well, you know, there's a new genre happening. It's called near life experiences.
I think that should actually be starting to happen a lot more now, because I don't know if you've noticed, but so many people out there, they barely seem like they're alive at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just zombified.
I call them the Walking Dead, and a lot of reasons for that. You see the Walking Dead around us. Cultures, family life, this world kind of beats you down before you get started in many ways.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, what was I doing? I was having a conversation with Anthony Ravlich yesterday, talking about human rights and the United Nations and the education system and how people should be able to have the ability to, you know, fulfill their lives and their life dreams and what have you. But they're not able to in so many cases. It's my conclusion that if you want to accomplish anything decent in life, you have to be capable of overcoming and ignoring and shutting out a huge quantity of the world that tells you you're useless, you're pathetic, you must go get this slave job, you must pay this mortgage, and so on and so forth. It's basically you have to fight against the entire current of this cultural river that is washing you downstream towards a life of insignificant days counting by.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the whole modern economic system is dragging all of us middle class into being servants and serfs. And you're born into it. It's evolved this way. I would say, especially since World War II and Bill Clinton really got it rolling, the end of the road for the middle class. So we're all being dragged into this culture where you're going to have to be part of the stock market to even get by. You can never earn enough money again to get by. So this is going to change, though, because the middle class is really feeling it, and the middle class is really the ocean of all of these stock market and everything else are the fish in the sea. And so we need to become self-initiated and realize that as a middle class and as a world culture of species, we have accomplished so much in what I call collective intelligence. We've accomplished so much till now. Why let the kings, priests, and thieves take it from us? You know, this has happened in every peak, in every culture. When there's been a zenith, the priests, kings, and thieves come in to kind of ruin it for everybody. This is a historical pattern, and we're letting it happen again.
I had this theory that maybe with the internet and with the sharing of information for the first time in history, we could prevent that cycle from recurring.
I think we have a better chance than ever if you use the technology, if you do something with your life about this. You can't just sit around and hope it's going to get better, because the thieves are stealing everything now.
Yeah.
By that, I mean the economic system and the stock market, those kind of things.
Mm. Well, see, those are real physical things that they're stealing. I think they're also stealing what's human potential, because you have a look at, say, the education system, and it doesn't train people how to start a business or create a product or to market said product or to.
Well, we're still stuck on the original idea of why public education took place in the first place, which started in England at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution to bring ignorant people off the farms out of the country, teach them to read and write and operate machines. And then our entire education system from then on till right now is really set up to make you a consumer and a producer. And that's pretty much all the system seems to be interested in. You know, they're cutting all the arts programs. You know, America's 43rd in the world in education now. It's astounding.
Yeah, I was watching a clip of a TV show the other day. It says America is number one in only three things. Military spending, incarcerating its own citizens, and forget what the third one was. Might have been most debt per household or something like that. Does that sound like the greatest country in the world to you?
Well, I tell you, I live here, and it's getting crazier all the time, because there's an oligarchy that's formed, and that's the super rich are getting richer all the time, and they really suck the lifeblood out of the middle class, and they've set up a system where it's very difficult to not play their program. And of course, their program isn't going to win for you, the small guy, anyway, which is the sad thing about the whole thing. You know, in my study of longevity, and that's my main study in my life, is longevity, quality of life. One of the things about that ties into this metaphorically is that, you know, cancer cells would probably live forever if they didn't kill their host. Cancer cells don't shorten their telomeres when they divide, so they don't age. So a cancer would literally live forever until it kills its host. I think that's what the economic system's doing. They don't realize it. They become a cancer on the rest of us. Literally, I believe that.
Yeah, like a plague of economic boils and sores kind of thing.
And is it smart to kill the host? A symbiotic relationship where everybody's healthy, everybody's doing well, like your own body, like your own immune system should be acting. We have a lot of parasites in our system now. The sad thing is that there are more millionaires and billionaires now than ever before, but I know some of these people. I've watched people become millionaires. And I tell you, something happens to people once they become insulated, don't have to worry about bills or the rent anymore. They forget about the rest of us. They really do.
Yeah. There was a movie called Unfaithful with Cher in it. And this whole premise of this hitman who's hired by her husband to come and kill her. And he's really opinionated hitman, and he has to sit there and kind of keep her in the house for a while until he gets this phone call for the order to kill her. And they have these conversations about all sorts of stuff. It's a great film. And one of the statements that he made was really interesting to me. It says, "You rich people, you don't have to worry about your rent or your car being fixed or anything like that. And then you start getting all depressed because you don't have any distractions, and now you have time to contemplate how fracked up you are."
You know, in a way, I've watched money make people's fantasies possible, but their fantasies haven't been good for them. You know, it's interesting. When you can afford all your fantasies, that I haven't seen that turn out too good all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I see it's like the Forrest Gump parable. My mom always said there's only so much money a man really needs, and the rest is just for show.
It's true.
Yeah, we're going to focus on living kind of humble. Like, I'm not 100% sure what I plan to do with my life, because my father was a very wealthy man, and he had terrible relationships with everybody because he just didn't care about anybody. He only really cared about his money. And it was very interesting. He didn't even care about me. Yeah, I didn't see him for like 17 years and then he died. You know, that's not just a money thing, though. You know, that's a, I'm not 100% sure what that is.
For me, what I've seen, money is very interesting. I like the whole idea because, to me, in my life experience, money makes people more real than anything else, religion or anything else, because, you know, you put an issue of a lot of money in front of someone or the lack of a lot of money when they need it. Money is like this drug, you know, like some drugs bring out the worst in people and the same drugs will bring out the best in people. Money is a powerful, powerful drug. It's it can make you delusional. It's amazing. But I have nothing against it. I believe you can do great things with money. You know, I believe people like Bill Gates and other, there are some great philanthropists in this world that are turning their fortunes around. And
I'd have to argue with you over the Bill Gates one. I mean, what's he doing? Well, he's purchasing Monsanto, who purchased Blackwater. He's financing massive vaccine programs that infect people with really horrible viruses in Africa, you know, this kind of thing. Well, his daddy was on the board of, what was it, Planned Parenthood, which used to be called the American Eugenics Society, and he donates heaps to that, and they've aborted so much as 80 million black fetuses since it started and that kind of thing. One of the biggest covert genocides of all time. Yeah.
I agree that there's been a big eugenics program going on ever since the book The Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich, and that has had a decimating effect on our demographics in the whole world because it changed the whole world. The amazing thing is that Ehrlich was everything he predicted in that book never came true. He believed we'd be all savages and cannibals eating each other by the 1980s. Everything in his book never came true, including the population bomb. There's no population bomb. We're hitting zero population growth in more and more countries every day. You know, yeah, I was saying right after my near-death experience in 82, I was telling people that the light told me that humans could never overpopulate the Earth and that would never happen, and I'm right. Look at all the facts today.
Yeah. It was really funny. I was watching this video here. What was it? It was a real paranoid video about Muslims invading Europe and America and how they have more children and eventually the Muslim population growth would overgrow and then all of a sudden all the Western nations would be living under Sharia law. And I was just looking at the statistics on this. When you're living in an underdeveloped country, birth rate's really, really, really high. Reason for this being is because if you ain't got no money or nothing like that, you don't really have any other way to grow your wealth apart from to have children, you know. There was a farmer that was once asked by a wealthier farmer next to him, "Why do you have so many children?" And he pointed to the man's tractor and he says, "That there that you've got, which I don't have, I have to have many children in order to get more work done on my farm. You don't have to." And what I found very interesting is the birth rates in Western populations, as soon as you've got money, as soon as you've got education, as soon as you've got all these things, the amount of children that you have declines very, very rapidly indeed, to the point in which what people are talking about is overpopulation or whatever. We're actually in more of an extinction scenario than an overpopulation scenario, if anything. Like you need 2.6 birth rate in order to maintain a society just to be able to keep it above board and survive with enough new generations coming up to keep working and supporting those on welfare and what have you. And we're currently sitting around between 1 and 1.6 in most Western countries. We're going freaking extinct. And people are talking about a population bomb? You've got to be freaking kidding me.
Well, there's demographics is something that the light in my near-death experience told me to study and really pay attention to, because it's more real than almost anything else you can imagine in determining our fate. And your stats are right, except the interpretation is this, at least from what I've learned, and that is that starting about 2020, the population's really going to start dipping very, very quickly, because the peak population now is 55 and over. And by 2100, there'll probably be close to half the population that we have now on planet Earth. Now, what that means is that there are a number of things that means on a couple of levels. One thing, it means less impact on the Earth by human beings. We've accomplished this at a time after 1975, because since 1975, we have enough technology, we have enough science, we can clothe, feed, comfort, educate every human on Earth without destroying it. But also, this, because of shrinking population, the demographics are showing people are moving to cities more, population centers.
Okay. Mellon Thomas Benedict from mellon-thomas.com is my guest. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual.
Welcome back.
So until I can say I'm credible.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, my very special guest, Mellon Thomas Benedict. He goes well with chicken as well. you talked about demographics, speaking of which.
Yeah, well, demographics is really one of the most important things that we can look at and understand about what's going on. It always has been, it always will be, as far as cultures, economics, and all of that. The really big guys that have the supercomputers that do all the scenarios, the large companies that do this research work have these supercomputers, and they run every scenario from the very best case to the very worst case. And even with that, they're quite often wrong, because they leave out little things like demographics. There was Paul Ehrlich's book, Population Bomb, was so wrong because they didn't have one demographics person help them write that book. They just kind of made it all up from what they perceived the world was doing. And that was my big problem. You know, before I had my near-death experience, I was convinced humanity was a cancer on planet Earth, and that nature had gone wrong, and that humanity would destroy the Earth in one way or another. And I was wrong. And most people believe that the world's about 95% broken, but in my DVD and the seminars I do, I try to point out to people with research that you can check yourself that the world is 95% better now than it's ever been in the history of the world for the general population of the planet, and that it's a 95% chance all this is going to work out very well, really. So I'm very positive about the future.
Yeah, yeah. There's an awful lot of fear-mongering out there, and I don't know about you, but very occasionally now I'll tune in and I'll watch the news and hoping to hear something important, something of consequence, something that's real. And instead, a convenience store has been held up by a singular robber. A person has been killed by their family member. A cat has been stuck up a tree and a fireman retrieved it. You know, things that are either really scary, but isolated and insignificant when you look at the whole picture, or things that are just completely insignificant and don't matter at all, and you wonder how the frack they made the news.
It's so true. There's more good news every day going on in the world than ever there is bad news. But the problem is that we're not holding our leaders accountable. You know, in every election in almost every country, they promise you everything and deliver very little of that, if any. We've been doing this for generations, and it's time that we really, really had our media and ourselves hold our leaders accountable. That's you've got to hold people accountable. This is big stakes going on here.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I was thinking about, December 21st, 2012, some people said there was going to be a massive consciousness shift in humanity and everybody was going to suddenly see auras and what have you. Didn't happen. Some people said that it was going to be massive tsunamis and earthquakes and things of that nature and the whole world's going to be wiped out. Didn't happen. Some people said that it was Return of the Destroyer and a massive planetoid called Planet Nibiru would slam into us and destroy all life on Earth. Didn't happen. Back in the day, when people made predictions that didn't pan out, they got stoned to death. And nowadays, if your predictions don't pan out, you simply move the goalpost back. Oh, no, it's actually going to happen in July of 2013.
Mm-hmm. Happens all the time. They just write another book. That's you know, that's how gullible I think the higher conscious movement has become. It's become very gullible and not that intelligent. That's what surprised me. I've been in the higher consciousness field now 30-some years, and I don't see it adding up to much more than a blip on the screen the way I see it developing. The thing is that true spirituality, true consciousness, is not based on all this New Age stuff. It's based on much more practical things, you know? And I call it, and I'm writing a little book called Practical Enlightenment. Well, what is enlightenment really?
You know, it's so funny you should mention this, because that's exactly what I was thinking about today before coming on the show, is that the reason why people in the quote-unquote New Age movement, or people who talk about the soul enlightenment or spirituality, I was just thinking, these people have just simply lost touch with reality. To a large degree, they think that these realms of higher consciousness are in fact more important to what they're physically doing in their own very lives, to what is really happening that they can actually evidence, you know. I am not saying that spirituality and pursuing enlightenment and talking about eternal joy is a bad thing. What I'm saying is it doesn't trump reality, okay? It's very important to understand that we live in a dualistic existence, that both really do matter, and one is not more important than the other. Just if you decide one's important and the other one doesn't matter, that's when you get into a bit of trouble.
I think what a lot of spiritual people have forgotten in all their disciplines is that the greatest spirit on earth is the spirit of life. It's something you can actually touch, interface with, become a part of. It's amazing. I get tingles every time I think about my new attitude since my near-death experience about the spirit of life is the greatest spirit on earth.
Could you explain what the spirit of life actually is, in your opinion?
Well, the spirit of life it was not created by a white man in heaven sitting on a throne. It wasn't created by a crow landing to earth and making babies. The spirit of life, we will probably never know where this all began. I've asked the light many times, and I keep being told what the masters have been told, and that is there was no beginning and there is no end to this. So, but what we do have is what we know about our life on planet Earth. That's where I kind of focus. You know, I'm a native Earthling. I'm not from some other planet, as a lot of people claim to be. I'm a native Earthling, and the study of life and biology is a sacred thing to me on this planet. I've coined a phrase in a ULL called sacred biology, which I'll be putting up very soon. This evolution that we've been on is an astounding journey, and people want hocus pocus and they want magic, but this is bigger than that. Imagine this. If you're in a human body right now, you have taken the whole walk through all of evolution from the beginning of life on this planet to this moment. And all of that life is within you. It shows in your DNA. It shows in all the stages of a mother's pregnancy. If you look at the fetus goes through every stage of evolution that the Earth has been through. I mean, we go through fish stage, a dinosaur stage. We go through tails and all that while we're in our mother's belly. So human beings... if you're a human being, you have taken the whole trip. You personally have made this 4 billion year journey to be here now. And what we've accomplished in this journey through biological consciousness, through cellular consciousness, and through intellectual consciousness is something we shouldn't lose. It's worth cherishing and it's precious to us. So it doesn't matter if you're dumb or smart. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. If you're in a human body right now, you personally have made this journey, 4 billion year walkabout, to be here now. That's what sacred biology is to me.
Sacred biology. Now that it all also erupts a whole bunch of conflicting thoughts within me to think that science itself ain't sacred. And I was just wondering, you know, in this day and age where we have people who are talentless getting massive massive contracts in Hollywood and things like that, or people who have never written a song in their life or shown any ability to get off their own ass, win American Idol, and this kind of stuff. What is sacred anymore?
Sacred is something that you choose to make sacred, like love. Love is sacred to some people, very special. Your children, ethics. These are sacred things that we make sacred. They are not sacred innately created sacred. We make these things sacred. And so for me, and what I learned in my near-death experience about biology and about evolution, really gave me a sacred experience about this. It's beyond intelligence. It's beyond magic. It's unbelievable what we're a part of. And we're at the tip of the iceberg. It's unbelievable how far we've come to be where we are.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that is the mentality behind people who've actually accomplished a lot in their lives is that, well, look at it this way. They do so much every single day that only but once in a while can they look back and see what they've accomplished because they're still doing new stuff every day. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just recently, I was on a cruise. I was asked to be a speaker on a cruise before Christmas for the December 21st thing. And so I was on a cruise to the end of the world. And I thought, well, that's perfect. I've never been on a cruise before. If it happens, I'll be at the bar having a martini. And what I learned is something very fascinating about all of this. And that is, you know, I never predicted the world would end. I wanted to be there when other people started realizing it. And oddly enough, for so many people that booked and went down there, the promoters overbooked the whole thing down there. It was a giant disaster. Not only cruise I was on, but everybody's experience was a giant disaster down there. Nobody had permits to go near the pyramids and do ceremonies that they'd planned and promoted. And I was there. I saw it all. You know, it should have been a reality show.
Well, I think that's quite funny, actually. You know, you base your life on something that doesn't exist because you're too stupid to fact check. And surprisingly, when you go and celebrate all this stuff and plan a whole bunch of things, it just doesn't pan out.
I know. I wonder if you can get your money back for all those books you bought about the end of the world before December 21st. You know what I mean?
See, I was looking at a DVD though on my shelf that one of my guests sent me called 2012 and The Shift, where he goes through all these Mayan ceremonies and all of this kind of stuff. And I had to turn the DVD off when I tried to watch it after about 12 minutes or something because it annoyed the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before 2012 happened, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but have you seen that movie 2012 with the massive tidal waves and disaster movie?
The theater film?
Yeah.
In fact, I tried to watch all of those things, even on History Channel and Discovery Channel, because people always ask me these questions, but not impressed by any of it, frankly.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually was. I thought the movie was really cool.
Oh, the movie? It was a good adventure movie, yeah, great special effects.
You see, but that's about it. And I was just wondering, how many times have you seen the end of the world on a movie?
Well, you know, I do a whole talk called The History of the End of the World, and I trace back all the times the world has been predicted to end, going back to 3000 BC, actually. This is a common thread among people that can't see the future and lose all hope.
Maybe it's because they don't appreciate what they've got, so they start predicting ways for it to differentiate.
You know, it's interesting that people don't get it. There is no death. There is not going to be an end of life as we know it. We will always have to change. Of course, everything keeps changing. Nothing will stay the same. But we've been in the last 10,000 years on planet Earth have been an incredible blessing geologically, planet-wise. As far as collective intelligence, the collective intelligence has hit a peak that's absolutely amazing in the last 10,000 years. And it's just a phenomenal what we have been able to accomplish in just a short period of time. Before this, there were great ice ages and all of that, which made life incredibly difficult. And I have a good friend of mine that's a UFO expert, and he was telling me how smart the ancients were. I've studied the ancients. I don't see any evidence that they were smarter than us at all. In fact, I believe that the wisest people that have ever lived are living now. And in every level, I mean, some people say we can't build another pyramid, and I know companies that can cut stones like that. But you read the books, there's nobody who can cut a stone like that. But I tell people that who needs to build another one? Who needs another one of those big giant stone pyramids? The pyramids that we're building today, and I show it in my DVD, are nano pyramids. I don't know if you've seen them. These are pyramids at the nano level grown on silica that are perfect pyramids to study 3D human cells under a microscope. Imagine that. The Egyptians could have never imagined building these kind of pyramids. So from going from gigantic down to, nano pyramids is quite a leap. And the Egyptians could never have imagined anything like this.
That's true. We've got a lot of advanced technology today. Jonathan Gray is a New Zealand archaeologist. He wrote a book called Dead Man's Secrets, where he's found, discovered, and documented, I think, about 20 different technologies that the ancients possessed, which are more advanced than we've got today. But you have a look at what we've got today, and we've got 20 million different pieces of technology that were more advanced than what the ancients had.
I tend to agree with you, because if you're a super intelligent civilization that can transcend time and space to get here, you can't get here at the speed of light. It'll take forever. You have to transcend time and space to get here. That means your culture is very, very advanced. And you probably don't even need money anymore. You don't need any of that. I expect more of my aliens than most people seem to expect. I expect more of the aliens. I'll give you an example. If I were an alien culture that wanted something to be discovered when people were intelligent enough to discover it, I would have built a pyramid out of this super material that's incorruptible, unbreakable, an atom bomb couldn't even destroy it. And once a culture figured that out, that would be impressive. But stone and that kind of thing, it's impressive technical capabilities. The Egyptians and the Stone Age people knew more about stones than we do, because that's all they had to work with. But, there was a wood age before the Stone Age. Incredible structures made of wood that we don't even know. We only have shadows of now.
Yeah, it's true. People do expect a lot of their aliens. I only expect my aliens to burst through my chest in a horrible fashion. We'll be right back after the break at the PhinneyEastwoodShow.com.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face.
Oh, when my back is turned. They lie about eugenics all over the place. All right, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Mel and Thomas Benedict is my guest. You're talking about the wood age before, and look, I've got this conclusion that technology is essentially one of the things that accelerates evolution. Biological evolution is slow. Technological evolution is rapid as heck. You just can't keep up with it, biologically speaking. And in a way, I think that because we're developing all these technologies, we're changing with them. So in essence, it's actually sped up biological evolution. The real fear here, though, is the transhumanist agenda, where they want to merge man with machine. I think kind of it's a bit scary, really, the concept of, in a part, giving up your humanity, because I think it's really the most important thing ever, more important than an iPhone, at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, sure, but it's inevitable. There are so many different. It's already begun, because there's so many different body parts that we can replace now with artificial equipment. That's a boon to mankind. And certainly we're now looking at cognitive enhancers, better vision, better hearing, all of that. And it's part and parcel of what's coming. Human beings, as I tried to point out in my DVD and my seminars, so human beings are the masters of metamorphosis. We have been everything on this planet. We have it within our in our DNA to grow gills again if we need to. We are the masters of metamorphosis, and we are all machines are mind machines. All machines, your car, your watch, your computer, they're all mind machines. They came from the mind. And so there'll be a day in which in the distant future where we don't need machines anymore. Right now we need our machines. We believe we need them, and they are beneficial in many ways. But this is incorporate. We're almost like the Borg in some way. We incorporate everything that we come in contact with. That's why I've always said that I really don't buy all the theories against and for the UFOs. I don't buy them because they're too simplistic or they're too perfect. I can tell you that, you know, there's a lot of sayings that people saying that, well, they don't want to show themselves because they'll change everything on Earth. Well, you can't scare humans with that. I believe if aliens landed tomorrow and made themselves known, within 2 weeks we'd have them in a Pepsi Cola commercial. You know, so I don't buy that. I have some friends that are very big in the UFO movement and lecture on that subject. And we sit around and chat sometimes. And one of them recently was going over this thing with me again, that there's all these great markers on planet Earth, like the pyramids and the snake mounds in Ohio and all these markers to guide the UFOs. And I looked at him and I said, you mean they can transcend time and space and they don't have GPS? And he was stunned. He never thought of that. He never considered that thought in his mind. I would expect a lot more when it comes to these sort of things, you know? So we are going to enhance ourselves. The enhancements, I think, in the future are going to be primarily for the handicapped and be boon to the handicapped. We'll have the handicapped walking again, hearing again, seeing again. I think these are the major advancements. Although I do, when they have them available, want a port put in my head, so I can put one of those gold chips in, you know, one of those fast processors. But who knows if they'll ever get to that. You know, the human mind was not meant to be an industrial model. It's only a blip on the screen in human evolution. The human mind, they say we only use about 5% of our brain. The latest studies show 3%. That's for what's coming. Once we transcend survival, once we've solved the survival problem on planet Earth for everyone, and once we move into new economies that are not based on you having to sell your life to someone else to earn living for food and pay other people to raise your children, then we move into where this brain can really be used. This brain is for the future, and it's going to take us to the future.
Yeah, I always found it interesting that the idea of feminism is to free women, and instead now all the women have to work because they don't have a choice, and now they're not allowed to raise children.
it's an incredible economic situation we've gotten into. I remember, I don't mind showing my age, I remember, and I'm a lot older than you, I remember, and some people my age remember, when for $100 a week, you could have a life, a car, and a house. I remember those days. Can you believe it? What happened? The economics were changed by the experts. And this has not been an accident, what has happened in economics. It's been how much can we get out of every single soul on Earth, which is a predatory parasite system. You know, I remember when gas was 28 cents a gallon. You know, I swore when it hit 50 cents, I'd never drive again. But why? You know, why does this have to change the way it is? So other than that, I think that a new Bill of Rights is coming around. Humans, especially the middle class, has to come up with a new Bill of Rights, a new Magna Carta that doesn't make banks more important than everything else in the world. Be too big to fail? Give me a break. That's a scenario for major disaster in the future. Who's too big to fail? You know, these big bankers that get all these salaries, they were afraid to fire them because, you know, they're so smart. Well, they weren't smart, were they?
I was thinking about this. Too big to fail. Imagine if you had an A student in your class and he was like the best student in the class or whatever, and then one year he goes off the rails and he just starts drinking every day and he doesn't really care about the work or anything and he goes Fs. Would the teacher go, oh my God, he's too big to fail. Let's give him A's or anything like that. Let's send him to higher education and be one of the rulers of society when he clearly hasn't freaking earned it and has totally fallen off the rails and taken an absence of responsibility. That's basically what we're doing here. It's insane. And no wonder the society is ruled by a bunch of ruthless sociopathic criminal scumbags who have no freaking concern for anybody's welfare other than their own, and even then.
Well, thank God there are a lot of people with great wealth that are really do have the right mind. They're against the odds, but the odds are in our favor. There's more philanthropy going on the planet now than ever before in history, and more young people becoming trustees of foundations right now than ever before in history. So, they quite often say the world doesn't change till the old guard dies off. And what we're seeing is the Cold War people, the World War II people, they're passing quickly, and that leaves a new world. You know, you got people like Dick Cheney and others who are that Cold War mentality that just is... It just ruins us. You know, their policies have what's really brought down the world.
Well, here's another problem that I have with that as well, because in terms of the listenership to the show, and you were talking about demographics before, we have a demographics analytics, and it turns out that the age group of between 40 to 65 mm-hmm. are the majority of the listeners to the show. And shows like this, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So there's a really interesting split here between the elders, as I just like to call them, who remember what things used to be like, that used to be free and easy to live and moral and what have you. And then, of course, there's another split where part of that generation were just basically scum, really bad people who wound up getting into positions of power and whatever, and they wound up setting the policy for all of these good people who don't like it. And those people are still in power today. And then you fast forward to this generation, mate, we're being taught the lessons and curriculums that have been set up by those previous scumbags. Like the UN, for example, massive human rights violators. They've done a whole lot of atrocities and things like that. Well documented, you know. Even in Haiti, I've seen videos of UN tanks rolling through shanty towns, just randomly firing into all these shanties and things like that. Just war crimes, basically. Then there's the Agenda 21 protocol, the desire to get everybody off the land, and the World Health Organization, which is financed by these major pharmaceutical companies, which are total scumbags, and Codex Alimentarius, so to get rid of everybody's natural health and all of that kind of stuff. And in the schools now, like at the elementary, primary level, they're being taught that the UN is the good, loving thing, and they're being taught to be global citizens, right, under this system. And so when the old guard dies, when my elders die, of old age or exterminators or whatever, I am really worried what the next generation is going to wind up doing, because as far as I know, the best way to control a society is to indoctrinate the youth, and indoctrinated they are.
Well, you know, I see a lot of evidence also of the youth becoming more active than I was, and I was a hippie against Vietnam and all of that. I call myself an anti-war veteran, and I'm proud of it. But I see the youth of today, actually, I'm so impressed. The general youth of today that I look at are doing more than I did, certainly more than my parents did for these type of things. And I see the youth of today doing amazing things. And the great stories of how a child can get an idea and change things in their neighborhood or in their state or in their country or in another country. So I tend to look at that kind of good that's going on, too. There's a massive trend for philanthropy and fairness and justice in this world. That's what's if you look at why people are in the streets and why they're doing the things they're doing, it's for fairness, equality, and justice.
Well, see, I've got the opinion that fairness, equality, and justice is an unnatural state of being. Like, I don't see any animal society or any point throughout history where everything's been fair, everything's been equal, and there has been justice for all. It would be very interesting to see what.
Yeah, it's been evolving.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if we can do it. But the thing is, my mentality is justice is an artificial state that we have to create. Okay, bad guys don't naturally go down. Like they always say, karma. You know, what goes around comes around. In my experience, it's the bad guys who always get rewarded, and the good people who always get punished. Unless somebody decides to change it.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. We have to become self-initiated now. We're more intelligent than ever, and we have more capability than ever. So I just try to get people to believe in what they believe in.
We'll be right back. Mel and Thomas Benedict, ladies and gentlemen.
Everyone's asleep.
Everyone's all right, welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We broadcast live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. And all the archives, including many other shows that I do appear on. I think I'm doing a couple shows next week and have done a few this week as well, are archived there on the Vinnie on Other Shows page. So, I'm actually kind of a better guest than I am a host sometimes. Like, have you noticed that, Melon? Well, like when you're the host and you've got the responsibilities and stuff like that, you're not really quite as on your game as you are when people are asking you questions and looking to you for answers or whatever. I don't know what it is. It's weird.
Sure. Oh yeah.
there's a strange phenomenon in this world, eh? Okay. We kind of haven't discussed anything about near-death experiences. We've been talking about more important things. The issues of the world. And, oh, my God. Hey, wait, hold on a second. I made a recording this morning off of a film called God Bless America. Have you ever heard of this film?
I'm not sure. It sounds familiar.
All right. Well, it's a Bobcat Goldthwait film. He's a guy who talks like this, you know. And he was in a number of films. I think Hot to Trot with John Candy as the talking horse or something like that. As Fred P. Chaney, quite a classic guy. And he made this film called God Bless America. And in the opening scenes, it's kind of like, if you had a fantasy, because everybody's had these fantasies, but they never go through with them, of changing society with a gun, you know? You have a look at all these scum on TV and all these really terrible, bad people that you think, man, why hasn't somebody killed that person yet? And this guy goes on a killing spree, and he goes and he kills all these really annoying people. it's quite interesting. I don't know. For me, I think I would describe the film as therapeutic.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. I have a friend of mine down in L.A. now writing a movie called Kill All the Lawyers. And I think that it may end up being popular.
Well, see, and this is the interesting thing, is that we're not actually going to physically go out and kill these people. We just fantasize about it. We never go through with it. Somebody told me once, you know, Vinny, all these bad people out there, you know, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and something, why hasn't anybody assassinated them yet? And I said, well, because only bad people assassinate people. And only a good person would want these bad people to be assassinated. You see what I'm saying? You know, you have a look at all the people that have been killed and executed and public executions and everything like that. None of them have been bad people. They've all been really good people that have been killed in public, you know, that kind of thing. I'd like to play this clip, actually, if I could, Melon, if you're up for just 60 seconds.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think it's really poignant for our times to a large degree. Hold on, here we go.
I would defend their freedom of speech to tell uninspired, bigoted, blowjob, gay-bashing, racist, and rape jokes all under the guise of being edgy. But that's not the edge. That's what sells. They couldn't possibly pander any harder or be more commercially mainstream. Because this is the, oh no, you didn't say that generation, where a shocking comment has more weight than the truth. No one has any shame anymore, and we're supposed to celebrate it. I saw a woman throw a used tampon at another woman last night on network television, a network that bills itself as today's woman's channel. Kids beat each other blind and post it on YouTube. I mean, do you remember when eating rats and maggots on Survivor was shocking? It all seems so quaint now. I'm sure the girls from Two Girls, One Cup are going to have their own dating show on VH1 any day now. I mean, why have a civilization anymore if we no longer are interested in being civilized?
Yeah, man. We get so enraged with the BS we see all around us. And I had a thought over the break, Mel, and we were talking about you reckon the world's going in a good direction and a lot of people would disagree with you. And I was thinking, what's the mitigating factor there? It's because all the people who think the world's going in a bad direction are listening to bad news all the time because it's what interests them. If you think something's a threat, that's what you go for.
I've seen many people get addicted to different things on the internet or on the media, and they just get stuck on it, and you can't get them off of it. You know, it's like that's the only reality that's on the airwaves. So I've seen that happen to people.
It's a bad news society, really. And I'm just thinking, if we did start up a website like goodnewsforachange.com or whatever, I think it would be abysmally unpopular.
Well, you're right. There have been several attempts to start good news channels and good news programs, and they don't last very long. Go figure.
I mean, I think I've probably come the closest to making a successful good news show because we're talking about all the bad stuff, but we laugh and we have a good time while we're doing it.
I tell you. But, you know, generally speaking, things are going to change so dramatically now as the population goes down. You know, when you have too much of something, it's not worth very much. Humans are going to become very much more valuable in the future than they are now. We have, you know, the rich and the oligarchy think that there are too many of us. That's what brought in this eugenics. You know, eugenics really was aimed at all the poor people in the world.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. It doesn't stem from science. It doesn't stem from sustainability. It stems from a hate of the human race and of itself. They just don't like humans. They look down on people that like they're cattle, like they're a commodity, like they're a waste of space. Like they don't have any value inherently as human beings anymore. And that's a psychopathic mentality.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, eugenics really got started with, I believe, Darwin's uncle began that whole thing.
Freud.
Thought some of it was very good, but they were looking at it as you look at livestock. You know, you don't breed inferior livestock with superior livestock, and that's how they were looking at everything. If you want to help the human population, we've got to get rid of all the handicapped people, all the poor people, and then we'll make a better race of humans. Completely wrong.
Well,
it's like breeding cattle, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, I think it's like humans can be, unlike most creatures, trained to do very, very different things for which their intended purpose was. I mean, humans, I think, are, like you said, malleable or masters of metamorphosis. And I had this a thought once about human potential. Let's say you have somebody who's potentially a genius, okay? So they are born and they have a 180 IQ or whatever. And you have two children like that. One is born to a psychologist at a university in Oxford in England, and his mother is a grand piano concert, you know, recital pianist or whatever, okay? And then you have the other genius is born to a warlord and a prostitute in Namibia. You'd create two entirely different individuals from the same potential due to their environment, wouldn't you? They wouldn't grow up to do the same thing or have the same interests. In fact, one would probably grow up becoming a murderer, a very intelligent murderer, and the other would go on to maybe understand the human condition and maybe write symphonies that would expand consciousness or something of that nature. You see what I'm saying? Like, human potential can be altered in any really way you choose. And when I was 14, I was a very violent kid for most of my life, and my school nurse or school counselor or whatever gave this pamphlet to my mother of ADHD symptoms. And it's like all these symptoms. You know how they say that anybody under the Alcoholics Anonymous list of could you be an alcoholic is technically an alcoholic, you know what I'm saying? And that's basically what was on this list, you know, all of my different personality traits. And I was like, whoa, that's very interesting. On that list of personality traits, there's highly intelligent, not able to sit around doing nothing for too long, and creative, etc. And they wanted to drug me. And my mother, instead of drugging me, she got a man who was about 40 years old named Derek Haywood, who was a lavender farmer, to come and hang out with me once a week. Suddenly, I kind of stopped being violent. I started plateauing. It wasn't the fact that I had something wrong, a chemical imbalance that needed to be corrected with a drug. It was the fact that I didn't have my dad around or any positive male role models in order to learn how to be a proper, good, decent man.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was why I was going out of control. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting about that pamphlet is I saw those symptoms again on a slideshow presentation that I was being shown in university. And those symptoms were describing an entrepreneur.
I know. If you notice all the drug commercials, the symptoms, everybody's got some of those symptoms. They're actually creating new syndromes and new diseases so they can use the same old drugs. You know, America has a big problem with drugging its children, too, at schools and things. It's a very big problem here.
Mm. And now the number one cause of death in America, suicide.
The number one cause of death?
The number one.
Really? I haven't seen that. Wow.
That news came out a little under a month ago or something like that. It surpassed heart disease and cancer and
suicide.
Everything, yeah. And you have a look at the side effects on these SSRI drugs, and it's like suicide. So many documented cases, it's just not even funny.
And the one thing they're pulling the cover over is, especially in America, and I'm sure it's with other countries, is the veterans have a very, very high suicide rate, and it's climbing, our veterans.
And guess who's on a hell of a lot of drugs as well at the behest of the Veterans Administration?
And so, you know, it's very sad what we're doing to these people, putting them in these situations that kind of ruin them for life, you know, for what? I ask you, for what? Why are we doing this, you know? So it's nice to be able to talk like this. Not too many radio shows I get to talk some of the other sides of things. So it's very, very refreshing for me in many ways, not just spiritual.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the Coca-Cola of radio show hosts. I'm really refreshing. I am the real thing. And I also have an excess of sodium so that you're thirsty after you listen to the show and you need to listen to another one.
Oh, good. Oh, that's a good one. Oh, boy.
Yeah, and I'm very sweet, too. I was thinking about, and I maybe want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. When you die, does your life actually flash before your eyes, like they say it does?
You know, it's a natural process of the transition. Many people can skip it. You're not forced to watch anything. There's no intelligence saying you've got to watch this. It's what we call now. When I didn't even know what it was when I had mine, but I had what they call a life review, and I found it fascinating and sad, and I found it enlightening. But there were parts of my life review for some reason I didn't want to look at. They were like doors I didn't want to open, and only later, through many visits back with the light and asking for clarification, did I finally open all the doors and see all the things. We all have things we repress. We all have things that we're not forced to look at or deal with. So a life review is actually a very natural process of death and the near-death experience. What people don't understand is it has a twofold purpose. The life review is something that you can learn immensely from if you're open to that at the time it happens. If you're someone that's ashamed of everything or hung up or totally deep steeped in fundamentalism, you may not have one of these type of experiences. You'll have your fundamentalist experience when you meet the light. But the so you're downloading, you know, you're reviewing your life. Your life is being reviewed. All the little minute parts of it, the big parts of it, the parts of it that you didn't think were heroic that were actually quite heroic. I got to see that. There are things we do every day that's quite heroic that we don't even think is heroic. And then the second fold, which is so important for the rest of us, is, and I was the first to point this out, is that that light we call at the end of the tunnel is our source matrix. There's only one of us here. There's only one life here. And that matrix, when you're having your life review, it's like you're downloading your entire life experience into the big supercomputer. And then you pass through the light. Everybody that passes through that light benefits from the experience of all the rest of us, because there's no one of us that could hold all this information, could see everything, could hear everything. There's not one of us that could love everything, actually. It takes all of us. It's taken this many humans to come to this kind of a consciousness on planet Earth. And so every time you pass through the light in your death experience, you become more enlightened, more wise, and that shows in everything that I'm seeing in the world. So there's a twofold purpose to the life review, one personal and one universal that benefits us all.
And I think I was interviewing a guy the other day, and he asked me, you know, what I perceive life to be. And I said, well, I honestly don't know. What I reckon is that I'm having some kind of subjective experience, and I exist in this incarnation of Vinnie Eastwood, and I don't want to waste that experience. But other than that, I'm not 100% sure. I don't have a, you know how some people, they have solid belief. You know what I'm saying? Like, I believe that I will go to a lake of fire, or I believe that I will have virgins and pork when I die and all of that kind of stuff. I honestly don't know what I believe. In fact, if I don't know something, then I don't really believe it.
It's true. Some things you have to actually experience and become aware of through your life experience or your death experience. For me, I didn't relate to any of this, nothing, psychics or anything, before my near-death experience. But I'm someone, and I'm the only one that they know of that's been studied, that I kept asking, like, what does this mean? What is it? What is it? What am I seeing? And I think that relates back to my early childhood. You know, as a child, my brother wanted bicycles for Christmas. I wanted a microscope. And I have been fascinated with microscopes, have several of them right now, high-quality microscopes. I love looking into things. So for me, the light experience, when I started seeing metaphors, because with the light experience, the source knows you like you've never, like no one you can imagine could ever know you. It's the source. And so it will speak to you at whatever level you're at, the idiot level, the genius level, the child level, the metaphor level, the religious level, whatever you're ready to relate to, the light will try to speak to you, you see? But I'm someone that had an early experience being raised in a Catholic boarding school. So we can talk about this after the break, but I can tell you what happened to me when I saw Jesus on the other side.
All right. Jesus on the other side with Mel and Thomas Benedict on after the break. On the other side, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Just like Jesus. All right, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose a sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. I'm wondering, did the light tell you anything about importance of keeping a sense of humor about things?
Well, you know, humor is one of the greatest medicines and healers ever. It's universal throughout our species, and even animals have sense of humor. We're seeing, you know, it's really quite healing. If you don't have a sense of humor, you know, God help you.
Yeah, and what were we talking about just before the break?
We were talking about the life review, and that the source knows you like no one else and speaks whatever level you're at. But in my case, I was the only one we know of that really kept asking, what am I seeing? Because I guess it was, you know, I was talking about my early experience with microscopes, and I love microscopes to this day, looking into everything. For me, when I did see the light, the first question I had for it was, I guess what any good atheist, I wasn't even an atheist, but I guess even an atheist would say, I mean, you were so impressed I went, are you God? You know? I mean, oh, boy. And then for a second there, I thought, oh, I'm going to get spanked for all the times I've, you know, spoken badly about God and that sort of thing. And because the light speaks to you so that you will understand at whatever level you're at, the light said to me when I asked that question, who is God? The light said to me, who and what is not God? And instantly I understood that if I wanted to tell you who and what God, the concept of God, the whole Godhead was, I would have to name every atom, everything in the universe, and that would take forever. So for me, what is not God, what is not part of the universe, it was the best answer for me. Now, what happened then was I saw this image of Jesus that blew me away. And I'm not a Christian. I'm still not a Christian. I have a big spiritual life, but not a religious life. And when I saw Jesus and I felt the energy, I mean, the Christ energy, the Christ matrix, I really felt it for the first time in my life. I went, whoa. But then I asked the light, I said, but I don't believe in Jesus. What am I seeing? And the light then educated me on what we were playing. What was playing back was my earliest memories, being raised in Catholic boarding school and being an altar boy. And that was my, we have these hardwired images inside ourselves from our youth that are hardwired in. And so that was my own experience playing out. But I tell you, I did discover that what people talk about, the Christ energy, the Christ aspect, is in every human, as the light explained to me. It's the highest aspect of every human. It could be the Buddha light, the Krishna light. It doesn't have to be the Christ light. It's the highest aspect that humanity has manifested to date, which is amazing. It's why people love each other. It's why people save each other. It's why strangers give organs to other strangers. There is this high aspect among humans that really doesn't exist at this level in any other species on planet Earth. And so the light answered my question. So when the light answered my question, then I said, well, where does religion come from then? Where does all this come from? And from Christ, the whole thing opened up like a lotus opening up, and I saw a whole, I call it the God stream of consciousness. I got to see all the stream of consciousness of all the religions that have ever been on planet Earth from the present. And there are about 300 new religions on planet Earth just since the 20th century, if you want to look at it. There's new religions all the time. And reformations of religions, even Islam is having a reformation. But I saw that every one of these came from the other. They all come from the same stream of consciousness. In other words, Christianity is a Jewish religion. Judaism is a Mideast, Arabian, Egyptian religion. And it goes on and on and on, how one came out of the other. But when fundamentalism takes over religion, they want you to believe they invented God, and this is the only God, and my God's better than you, and if my God tells me to kill you, I can. That's the bizarre part of religion. But the highest aspect of all these religions is something very special, really, if you get to the pure essence of it.
You know, it sounds to me, I don't know why I'm remembering this based on what you've said, but I remember when I was 10 years old, I was at school, and the way kids would threaten me is it's, my dad could beat up your dad, or my brother could beat up your brother. And I was thinking, this is how religion works. Somebody who isn't me can beat up somebody who isn't you. Really? Well, thank you very much for enlightening me. What's going to happen now? Mm-hmm. And what's happened, I think, in the entirety of human history is that people have taken one truth and multiplied it into something that's completely untrue. And this is where cults come from, I think. And we have in society now these, I don't know, they're almost decentralized cult things, you know, like there'll be a personality cult around one particular activist or something of that nature. And anybody criticizes that person, you get massive trolls on your websites and things of this nature. It's like, people have forgotten the real truth of things, as you're talking about, is that, you know, our higher self is about loving each other just because we can, not because we have to.
Or because we've been commanded by some deity somewhere to do all of this. This is something very valuable about humans and the nature of the planet and the nature of humans is our ability to love and have empathy and compassion is amazing. And that's a human incredible aspect of grace on this planet.
Yeah, I think we really got to kind of harness compassion in general. And it's something that's sort of been bred out of the political class to a large degree. And as we were mentioning earlier on in the show, you know, you've known people who've become millionaires and suddenly they stop caring about everybody else. They lose their compassion. And maybe it's because they're not suffering along with the rest of us.
I've seen it happen a number of times. You get insulated and you forget other people have to pay bills. In my experience, the millionaires that I've hung out with because I'm an inventor is, I'll give you there are two examples. The self-made millionaire will buy you lunch. Usually the person inherited all the money doesn't. I've seen it repeatedly. Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. Well, is that because the self-made person appreciates what he's got and he's very generous with it?
I think so, and there's just being born into it. I've just noticed that difference in my life of dealing with business people, and there's a difference between self-made people and those that have just inherited everything.
And in fact, we were discussing this yesterday on the show. It might have been the day before yesterday. Anyway, my mate Frederick, he's also got a show on this network. He used to live in one of those areas where the rich go to play and have their holidays and things like that. And he used to hang out with a lot of the young kids that would come in with daddy's credit card or whatever. And not only could they just suddenly buy a dirt bike and all the great gear and stuff like that, so he could come around and play with all the local kids and stuff like that, who maybe had really crappy gear by comparison. And they'd go around to their big mansions and drink all their booze and smoke all their weed and what have you. But what was really interesting to him is that he could take care of himself, and he was homeless for a period of time, you know, or close enough to being homeless, and he could still take care of himself. Whereas these kids couldn't take care of themselves at all; they could barely tie their own shoelaces, couldn't really drive a car, and what have you. And they become really dependent ultimately. And that was their real pitfall is if you haven't been challenged enough to earn what you have, you become dependent on what you have in perpetuity until you lose it.
It's interesting. It's very, very interesting how all that how all that plays out. It's just very interesting. You know, when I was in school, I had a meeting with my guidance counselor. There comes a time, maybe the 10th grade, where in America they used to want you to think about what you want to be when you grow up. Do you want to go to college, or do you want to be a tradesman? What do you want to be? Think about it, and then you're supposed to think about it for a couple of weeks. And I did, very deeply, and my appointment came with the guidance counselor, and I went down and had my appointment. And he said, have you thought about what you want to be? And I said, yes, I have. I put a lot of thought into it. He said, well, what is that? And I said, I want to be a philanthropist. He said, do you have any rich relatives? And I said, no. And the next thing I know, I'm in wood shop making bookcases. I didn't understand that to be a philanthropist, you had to actually have some money. I just wanted to give away money.
Well, I guess the guidance counselor must have been philanthropist at you. you know, what I found very interesting is that children are expected to discover who they are and what they want to be before they've had any life experience. Doesn't that seem fracking insane to you?
Well, we're really pushed that way. You know, our education system kind of does that to us. It kind of industrializes all of us, including outsourcing our real self to others. But a new education system like Montessori and others, Steiner and all those kind of education systems are about creating a superior human being first, a problem solver, a resolution oriented. And this is something that, especially in America, we're not getting at all in our. And you've got to get this in when you're young, really. And so we should be producing superior human beings, and then engineers, and then lawyers, and then everything else. But what we're trying to do is just make everybody be acceptable, an acceptable engineer, an acceptable this, acceptable that, and pretty much outsource your whole life to someone else.
Yeah. I say, to hell with being acceptable, let's try being exceptional.
Exactly. Yeah.
what the hell is the point in fitting into a crowd? You know, I'm 6 foot four. I can't fit into a crowd if I tried. And what was interesting is, like, people, I come out and I do this, and I do this radio show, and I'm out there with the giant megaphones and blaring up and getting in the face of the politicians and everything. People are like, Vinny, aren't you afraid that they'll come after you? And so, and my standard response is, dude, I'm 6 foot four. What the frick can I hide from?
Well, you know, it's an amazing experience. You know, I've had the bureaucrats come after me a couple of times for my inventions because they just didn't like quantum biology or something like that. And I've had to deal with that, but have survived it. And people don't understand what the local officials in your town and your state have more power over you than the central government, than the president of the country. And these are the people that really can do more to you, and you never pay attention to them, the power that they have, the local authorities and that. I've had one major invention that was in a clinical study pulled because they didn't like the word quantum biology, the health department, so to speak. But we were right in the middle of FDA process when it happened. They didn't care. They just came in with both boots and embargoed that piece of equipment, which I eventually got back, you know. But so unless you've been raided, and I have, unless you've been persecuted, and I have, you really don't understand the power of the locals around you, the city and the state and that sort of thing. I've had those experiences. I've survived them without a negative attitude. I realize that there are dragons we have to face, especially if you're a pioneer or if you're going to be exceptional. You're going to have some people in your way just trying to be exceptional at anything that you do. But I've persevered. I keep inventing. I have technology in 15 countries now. And, these battles come along the way if you get out front. You know, it's always people in the back of the line that are the safest.
Well, I think there's this developmental problem is like a prison, for instance. It actually costs a shockingly large amount of money and is a full-time job in order to keep prisoners in prison. And while you're busy keeping other people in prison, you're not improving yourself or improving society in any way, shape, or form. You're simply trying to prevent other people from making it bad. And as a result, you don't make things any better. And that's the society as the way it is. People make a more massive effort to prevent people from being exceptional than they do from improving themselves or society. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, the prison industry is quite huge in America, and I live in California. It's huge in California. I mean, they have a political power, the prisons and the companies that run them. And if you look at most of the people in prisons in America, it's for nonviolent crimes, actually. I mean, it's costing a fortune, and it's not really rehabilitating anyone, you know. So that's a serious problem in this country, but it's become an industry. It's become a huge industry, even... you know, there have been a number of scandals in America on these prisons for children. And they have...
Yeah, juvie.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So you know, this is not enlightened, but these things will change because if something gets too big, you can't support it anymore. And for the state of California, so much money is going to these kind of things, you can't even pay for schools anymore. I have schools in my local area that can't buy new books, desks, or chairs, and students are not allowed to bring their books home. Ridiculous, isn't it?
You know what's more important? Just think about this. You know, he's just a dude in a boardroom, just like he's got the state budget in front of him. Okay, what's a higher priority? Children's education to keep them out of prison, or financing the prisons to keep people in prison around other prisoners that will make them reoffend and go back to prison?
It's really an old paradigm, and you know, the old paradigm's become so expensive now, it's breaking everybody. You know, the old paradigm of war and attacking people, all of that has become so expensive now, it's breaking everybody, which in a way is kind of what has to happen. You know, things get so big till they break. And then that's when the new systems reform. It's sad it has to go this way because it's hurting all of us. It's hurting everyone that's not in prison, you see? So these are the kind of things that will change because the system cannot carry this much longer.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting is they're now turning the schools themselves into prisons. You see that with all the kids being searched before they go in with the metal detectors, bars on the windows, that kind of thing. It's like going to prison is sort of like going to college now. You know, you've graduated from mini prison and you're going into a larger, more extravagant prison.
Okay.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Prisoner theme song. Oh, well, he's not going to keep playing it, is he? All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show that's all about trying to get out of here in terms of the prison planet of some description that we happen to be living in, behind bars of varying descriptions, bars on your mind, bars on your body, and bars on your soul. And oh my goodness, we're trying to bake you a cake with a nice file in there so you can, like, get that freaking, get the breakout going. We want you to break out, ladies and gentlemen, like pimples on a teenager.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I kind of go too far with the puns and metaphors and things sometimes, don't I?
Some people are trapped behind chocolate bars, though, struggling with that.
That's true. Well, if they're trapped behind chocolate bars, they're also trapped inside this massive blob of a body that they've got there. And if they've been trapped behind enough chocolate bars, they probably are so big that they won't be able to get out of their house. And if they die, we'll need both a crane and a piano box at their funeral.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really sad. And I was talking to my mother a little under a month ago. And I asked her about you know, people being fat and stuff like that, and what was it like when she was a little girl? How many fat people did you see walking around? And she says, you know, it's actually really not ridiculously different to today. But one thing she did notice that was very different is that Maori, the local indigenous population of New Zealand, it was very, very rare to see one of them that was overweight. And today, they have one of the highest obesity rates in the developed world. And this is actually the case with so many quote-unquote minority groups, is that they're actually more affected by the poisons and chemicals and fatty foods and things like that on a race-wide level than Caucasians are. Like even fluoride, for example, affects black people twice as much as it affects white people. And about Hispanics also affected about 50% more by fluoride than white people as well. It's really weird. It's almost as if there's a massive eugenics program to wipe out people that are quote unquote undesirable.
Well, you know, as a species, we've been going through this, since the New World was discovered and sugar and all that was discovered. But it really, this obesity thing really took off about 1975 when Cereal Corporation got fraudulent FDA approval for aspartame, which became sucrose.
And the guy
that invented fructose.
Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld. He was head of that company at the time. But the man that invented it, I saw an interview with him recently, and he says it was one of the biggest mistakes he ever made, because we now know all these years later that if you put fructose, and they do it in baby formula and everything, peanut butter, all the kids' foods, if you do this to children, it turns off the leptins in their brain permanently. The leptins let you know when you're full. And there's a direct connection to the obesity rise in all cultures. And since 1975, there's a direct path, a direct chart that you can chart out related to that. And now you have the inventor of fructose saying it was a huge mistake. They thought it was healthy. They thought it was going to replace sugar, but it was a big mistake.
Yeah, well, maybe he didn't pay attention to the fact that it killed every single rat in the tests.
Yeah, they got that through with a lot of friends at FDA.
Yeah, and The FDA is bringing down the United States health. Just isn't it interesting how those who are appointed to do a job are actually there to do the direct opposite of what their job description is? Food and Drug Administration, there to ensure food and drugs in America are safe. They're actually there to ensure that they're dangerous. The president, commander-in-chief, you know, there to command effectively a country and at wartime, you know, you use intelligence and special resources and things like that in order to get threats eliminated. But they don't. They simply get the country into massive debt and create enemies everywhere they go.
Well, you know, especially, it began a little before, but especially with Bill Clinton's administration, the government has been turned over to industry to run the government, and the FDA got reorganized to where the companies are self-regulating now, and they have to pay, the companies pay fees, and that's what it's all about. That you've got the corporations running FDA, you've got the corporations running the Congress, running the government, and this all happened, this just happened to us inch by inch and really got accelerated by Bill Clinton and everyone after that. And
he now, wasn't he the one who repealed Glass-Steagall, the one that made fraudulent gambling derivatives illegal?
He and his good friend who was a chairman of Wells Fargo Bank, and look how much trouble Wells Fargo got into. You know, Bill Clinton was a friend of the bankers for sure.
Okay. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? Just understand something. If somebody comes at you saying they're trying to help you, assume, until you've seen the evidence, that they're trying to kill you. And 90% of the time, you'll actually be correct. Maybe even 99% of the time. And yes, I do realize the irony that 90% of all statistics are made up. including vote counts, I would assume. And it occurs to me, at least, that the entire system, and this is kind of everything. What was it? Was it Bertrand Russell who said, you know, the government's supposed to take care of the people from cradle to grave or something like that? Some old philosopher. And I don't think that you're supposed to be taken care of your whole life. I think you're actually supposed to suffer through a good chunk of your life so that you learn valuable lessons in it. There is no real value without pain.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Well, that's certainly the old paradigm. You know, I heard a good joke the other day. A friend was telling me, why is Earth one of the most favorite reincarnation destinations for souls? And I said, why? And he said, this is where you come when you need a break from eternal bliss. So don't expect it here. You're on vacation from eternal bliss. You can always have it, but you're on vacation.
And the irony being is that we're supposed to be here to for the alleged pursuit of happiness. I don't know. I seem to be in the pursuit of scumbaggery.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, happiness is a very subjective thing to people. You know, bringing happiness to others or happiness to yourself, very, very subjective, you know, what happiness really is. So the pursuit of happiness, I don't even know what that means. What does that mean? I can do whatever I want. It's very, very undefinable.
Well, I think happiness is a carrot that's dangled in front of you that you'll never reach.
Yeah, pretty much like heaven.
Yeah, and I thought about making this picture of a horse with blinders on, with a carrot in front of him, and he's trying to go after the carrot, and he's hauling an entire carriage of carrots behind him,
mm-hmm.
and it says, "This is the economic model."
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Teach
yeah.
people to follow something that they'll never get, never realizing mm-hmm. that the entirety of what they want, they've already got it on their backs. If only they would take their blinders off and stop trying to chase after things they can never get.
Well, it's very, very true. This is how so much has been pulled over on us and why all of our wealth and all of our energy has been robbed from us, you know, so far. When we have all the power, we have all the access, we have more votes than they do. So when someone says, you know, I'm in the 99%, I say, that's great. 99% is a lot more powerful than 1%. It really is. You've got to turn that around.
Well, see, what I find interesting is that 1% of the people in this world do 99% of the work.
And, you know, that's the way it's going to be in the future, too, because the future that I've been shown that's coming is a future in which most people are not expected to work. And, you know, all the drudgery, all of that are replaced by our robots today. You know, it's the what really freed the slaves in 1807 was not so much all the do-gooders, although they were really trying and they meant well. It was the Industrial Revolution. Suddenly, you know, before the Industrial Revolution, the only way you could be rich is having lots of servants and slaves and serfs. But after the Industrial Revolution, you could become very wealthy just owning machines and having a... so that really freed the slaves more than anything else. And just as that pattern, our artificial intelligence, our technologies of today will free us into the future. And this is why I was told by the light that the people of the future think of us who are living now as the giants of history. We think of ourselves as some hairy worm that's eating every leaf on the tree, some ugly thing. But we don't realize that we're in the process of metamorphosis. We're in the process of becoming something we can't imagine, like a butterfly.
Yeah. And currently we're encased in a chrysalis, but within it, we're developing into something beautiful, something grand, something that we were meant to develop into throughout our entire existence. As a very encouraging thought.
It's been a continuum getting to where we are, and where we're going is really cool, because in the future, most people are not expected to work. There'll always be the A types who want to do things, fine, but you don't need people running the sewage plants. You don't have any of that anymore. In some of my seminars, I do an exercise with people saying that this is as close as one or two incarnations from now, because I really believe in reincarnation since my near-death experience. But the point is that try for the first time in your life to imagine a lifetime in which you did not have to work for survival, food, or travel. What would you do with your life then? Start thinking about that. What would you do with your life if you didn't have to spend all your time surviving?
You know, I don't have to spend virtually any of my time surviving. And it's because I decided that my life was worth more than menial existence, that I was meant for something greater than making money for other people off of products that don't change the world and don't make a difference. As soon as I decided that I did want to make a difference, that I did want to change the world, I started going out and doing it, survival became natural. Thank you, Melon, for coming on the show. Melon-Thomas.com. It's been a great pleasure. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.